next event?
Thanks. I'm David Cross, as I mentioned. I'm not big on titles, but I'm actually TDBC Security. And this was kind of a great opportunity for Daryl and Neil to kind of say, hey, Dave, come speak here, because I never got to do this before, and I was in Windows Server for 4 years. But I moved over to TDBC Security about 6 months ago because security is my passion. And then the topic came up saying, well, gosh, Dave, would you be interested in giving a presentation here at this PlugFest? And I was like, what could I put together that would be meaningful or possibly of interest to this diverse audience of different things? So one of the things I put together is kind of based on our security intelligence report that we put together every year. Because I think there's some pretty interesting data here that people may find interesting. And I'm very open, right, from questions and things like that. So don't hesitate if there's something that I don't cover, or if you have questions, I'd love to drill into it and answer your questions to make it a good use of your time. So the security intelligence report comes out. This is based on the data from the 16th one, which is fairly recent in the past couple weeks. Is really, we look at the trends of what's going on around the world, right? What type of exploits, what type of tools, what are the targets, where do they come from, where are they hosted? And we get this data from around the world. And we put out a report. And so with that is, we pull. Where do we get the data from? Well, we get it from lots of different things. We get it from Defender or Microsoft Security Essentials. They're all the same engine. We get it from Exchange Online Protection, for spam, our endpoint protection. We also get it from, hey, we're running from Outlook.com or Hotmail.com. I still call it Hotmail. We get it from Internet Explorer. We get it from the MSRT, this malicious software removal tool. We get tons and tons of data, and we try to pull it all together. Now, animation didn't get removed. So what are the trends that we're seeing? So one of the most interesting things here is remote code execution. Now, the trend has gone down. And what does this really mean? Is that if you look over the past few years, is a lot of the code or the malware that exists out there that can remotely control your machine or code remotely, sorry, I'm saying it the wrong way, malware that can remotely control your machine or is a zero day, it's not being used that often anymore. Do you know why? Because it's become so valuable. And actually, one of the things is that actually, if you have a zero day and you remotely can control it, it's detected pretty quickly. And then all of the antivirus, Microsoft, Symantec, everybody, we detect it very quickly, and then we can eradicate it quite quickly. And so if you're going to use it, you better be able to use it for the most important things if you're in that kind of business. Or now if you actually discover them, they don't really disclose them. They sell them because they're so valuable. And so being very public about it. So that's actually an interesting trend that we're starting to see over the past couple of years. Now, you can see also here through the other data is really, it used to be for a long time is that you would get the malware or the remote code execution would occur and stay active for long periods of time. Now it's continued to go down. And it's all about zero days. And the zero days are the most painful, and they're also the most common that we have to deal with. And that's why people hold them. Or say people, and if you want to call them people, but they hold them and they use them, and because they have a very short window of how long they can use, because people patch and service their clients, servers, and devices much more frequently than ever before. Now, when you look at also on a little bit of the trends, is then what's the other thing? Is well, it used to be a lot about buffer overflows and things like that. Well, we've got really good tools now. If you actually look at a lot of the tools, public tools, and the ones that Microsoft we use in our products, we've really got a good handle on those. But the number one that we're seeing now in the past year or two is the use after free. And probably familiar with this. Pardon me? Oh, the use after free is kind of like the pinkish purple here. And that's the top one. So that's been one of the biggest problems we've actually had in Internet Explorer. I don't know if anyone's heard of I'm supposed to repeat the question. Could I read out the colors so I can say that. So, yeah, so here, I think the one I want to call out is the trend is like the purple pinkish called for use after free, is because this is where a lot of the zero-day exploits are occurring now, especially in Internet Explorer. Is now one of the positive things is that for Microsoft is we just did their latest Patch Tuesday is we had some mitigations put in that we think is going to bring those down enormously. But that's from a programmatic, from a development standpoint, it's been a challenge in some things. Is that something that a location or object that was freed and then you just get reused because it was never zeroized, it's very, very painful. And we saw this quite a bit in some products. That's kind of the latest trend that we've seen over the past year or two. The other things we're seeing is that we did a lot of great work over the past few years with ASLR, right, and DEP, right, the address space randomization and the delayed execute protection. So we've seen a lot of progress on that. But now we're actually seeing, if you look around it, is looking at things that go around these techniques, especially, you know, the return object, you know, things and heap spraying. And so what we're seeing is a lot of research by the malware authors out there is how to get around some of the protections that we have in Windows. Now, one of the things that we're trying to push really hard is anyone that develops on top of Windows is right to be ASLR compliant and things like that using these type of techniques. This is very, very important. But we're still seeing a lot of research. And this is why we have one of our bounty programs is so that when people that can work around these mitigation techniques, we want to know about it. We want to detect them. We want to prevent those. And that's kind of our focus because there are some very smart people out there. Now, here's one that sometimes when we talk to customers, it really surprises people. Then we talk about, okay, Microsoft, what is the thing that has the most vulnerabilities based on the malware we're seeing around the world? And this is all based on data that we collect. On blue here, the first one, Java, the Java runtime engine. That is where enormous amounts of all the malware out there, whether it's targeting Windows machines or others, is based on Java. And this continues to grow and has been. And you can see over the past couple of years, yes, you know, in orangish, yellow, you know, Adobe Reader has been a problem. Yes, Internet Explorer, but compared to the number of exploits out there, it's Java. And it's amazing that when we talk to a lot of different customers and saying that, are you even using applications that require Java? A lot of customers say, I don't know. I don't know if we're even using it. Well, but do you still have it on your workstations? Do you still have it deployed? Are you keeping it up to date? Because this actually is one of the biggest areas that we find there's just lack of awareness that by many people in the community that this is actually one of the biggest problems.
Java exploits, more school Java exploits, in a sense, it doesn't really matter as Windows, it can
include you. The question is, are these Java exploits, are they portable, or are they just Windows? No, they are very portable, because a lot of times they're delivered through the web and things like that, and the JRE is there on your, doesn't matter if you're running Windows or Linux or Mac. I actually don't know about Mac, so I shouldn't say authoritatively about that. But if you've got the JRE there, yes, you're equally exploited. So they're not targeting Windows because there's many other platforms out there, and it's not just Windows. Good question. Next is, as I kind of was implying a little bit earlier here, you can see that the type of issues on the past. So historically, right, they were, you know, if you go back, you know, a few years ago, it was like, hey, we still had lots of buffer overruns, we still had integer overflows and things like that. And now we pretty much are getting a good handle on that with, you know, certainly with all the tools and automation that we have in our systems. We've also got, because of DEP and ASLR, but now it's the non-memory safety, you know, type of things, types that we're seeing out there, which is the blue here. We're seeing more and more of those. And that's actually kind of challenging because these techniques to get to be much more complex, right? It's not like a simple, oh, if it's a simple buffer overflow, it's pretty easily fixed, pretty easily found. You look for other examples of it, easily fixed, patched, etc. But when some of these other exploits are found, you know, sometimes even use after free, how you patch and manage those, or identify other techniques, or something gets around ASLR or DEP, boy, it gets pretty complex. Saying, gosh, we found a way around, it's not a simple fix. And this is where it gets a little more challenging sometimes to patch them because of the implications. But this is where we continue to do work in continuing to implement things that harden it, these type of techniques, regardless. I think what you see in the latest patch that came out for Internet Explorer, like the ISO heap, right, work that was done, that reduces, I think, some of the use after free vulnerabilities that are occurring by, you know, 50-60%. Is it 100%? No, there's still risks there. But that's where we're continuing to make our investments as a company in some of the software products. Okay, what's some of the trends that we're seeing? So as I saw in the previous slide, is, you know, here at the top, right, we're still seeing in blue, the top line, you know, Java is still being, you know, the most commonly type of exploit that we're seeing across the data sets that we have. You know, the second is we continue to see, and I'll drill into this a little bit more later, on the second line, and kind of like the kind of a light purplish, pinkish, is, you know, the Java HTML, JavaScript and HTML. So basically the web-based attacks, right, you know, drive-bys, continue to be very, very common. So we have seen a reduction a little bit on the operating system, the third line, you know, the kind of the orangish color, you know, but we still see some things like that, as well as, you know, documents, Word, Office, you know, Adobe as well. And they're still in the lower ends, you know, but we still see the biggest trend still being in the drive-bys and the web being the biggest risk. Now, malware. So in a general sense, I think, you know, kind of looking at the data here, is looking at the machines that we get all the data from, is so we break it down into two ways. One is the encounter rate, and second is the infection rate. Now, the encounter rate on the top line in blue is users or machines that encounter malware, okay? The purple line, the bottom line, the infection rate, is the machines that actually were infected or compromised. And so you can see, in a general sense around the world from the data, is 20% of the machines around the world on an ongoing basis are encountering malware, whether it's from a remote attack, whether from a drive-by on a website, whether it's through phishing or email. And it's about, I think, about 1.2% actually get compromised based on that. But I thought myself, it's still kind of quite interesting that around the world that we're still seeing the users on an ongoing average basis are encountering this 20% of the time. Quite scary, if you ask me. Now, and you say only 1% are getting malware or compromised machine, it's still pretty high. So even though 11 machines out of 1,000 is still quite dangerous. Question?
Is the uptick of the phone quarter, is that statistically significant?
The question is, the uptick at the end, you know, that goes up, is it statistically significant? I think you have to look at this over time, right? And so even this is actually just 1 year. So I think at the moment, not necessarily. I think if I look back, I'm trying to remember if I look back data, is it's still staying pretty consistent. We are seeing some downward trend on some things on the infection and the infection rate. But I think the slight uptick is not at this time. Question? Okay. So kind of look at locations a little bit. We've got some interesting, you know, kind of geographical data, you know, and you can see some of the trends here, you know, of, and this is where the upticks and downticks may pop out a little bit more, is these are looking from the, you know, the selection, you know, from the report, is you can see that in some ways, like over the past year, the encounter rate in the United States, you know, went down a couple of percent. But you also, I don't know, maybe it's deal with something going on right now in Brazil, you know, with football or soccer, as Americans call it, I don't know. I'm sorry. Yet the encounter rate has gone up significantly. Why? Not sure. But it's interesting that we're seeing some of these trends, you know, in different places around the world. And I've got some more visual slides here I think will be quite interesting. So here, this is based on all the collection points and things like that. And you can see the really hot spots around the world based on the collection points of where the encounter rate is much higher than average. Now, some people will say, there's no malware in Greenland, right? They're not encountering it. Well, there's no malware, you know, in Madagascar that anyone's encountering. In some places, we just don't have enough data. And so I don't want anyone to be misled on a given place that you're saying that, well, gosh, Japan's the best place to be, you know, because you won't get any malware. Actually, I was there a couple weeks ago for vacation. That was a great place to be, but I digress. But so that you're seeing the interesting places. It certainly, I think, of you look at, you know, India and things like that, how much the encounter rate is growing up, which is quite interesting. Now, then, if you build on top of that, this is the infection rate. So not just the encounter, but the number of machines that are actually getting infected and compromised. And this is well above the average. When it's the dark red here, or burgundy, I think is that it's significantly above the worldwide average. And so this is kind of interesting for this quarter. Now, one thing that I have to be careful in sharing is that this was through the fourth quarter of 2013. And that this isn't in any day and time, right, that can change. And this data comes from our removal tool. So the Microsoft malicious software removal tool, that is how we measure this. And so these are the machines that we decided to target the most for malware. And that's why those places are the hottest. Question?
What's your confidence factor that that's catching everything?
Question is, what is our confidence that this is catching everything? So as I was kind of implying just before the question is, it is not catching everything. And because we have to, as a company, with our malicious software removal tool, we decide what to target on a given month. You know, or a given quarter, because we went at everything because it's a long tail. I don't think everyone would want it running for hours on days and on some machines. So, and sometimes we could say, here is the most prevalent thing in the Middle East and in India this year or this quarter, and we're going to target that particular software. And it's not in Australia at all. So they're like, oh, great, there's zero encounter rate this quarter, but it may be very high in a quarter in another part of the world. So it depends on, this is why it's very interesting, but you have to watch the trends over time. But I think I have a little bit more of that data coming up here. Currently, if you look at, so look at more of the trends here, and some of this, you can see this in the online Word doc, I think it's like probably 150 page, you know, document if you want more details, is you can see, you know, over the past year, the location with the highest encounter rate, right, has been, you know, Pakistan over the past year, in blue at the top. You know, interesting also like Vietnam, you know, in purple, again, very high at the bottom line here. You know, 40 to 60% encounter rate in those countries over the past year. Quite interesting from a data perspective. Much higher above the average, the worldwide here, which is in the dotted gray line. Then we also have then the highest confirmed compromise rate, and so you can see that Pakistan is also very high here in the green line, you know. But Martinique and Tunisia, right, 40 to 50% of the machines over the past year now are being encountered with some of the most of the malware that we're targeting to remove from the machines that we have access to through the MSRT tool. Is it, like I said, as I was implying earlier, is this isn't that these locations are the only locations that are being infected and being compromised. These are the ones that are seeing the highest rates for the types of malware that we're targeting for that given quarter. Question?
Do you have any information on that? Why you have some countries like Indonesia,
The question is, you know, do we have any intuition or, you know, of why this is occurring in some countries and not the others? Is that a good way of putting it? Well, part of it is, I think, of where we're seeing I don't want to say this is, I have all the data on this, but saying one is, the, you know, the awareness, you know, in education. Two, you know, of the problem space. Two is the patching and servicing. In some places that they may have PCs that are connected and on the internet, but do they get all the patches and servicing and updates that they should to remain there? You know, and third is really running, you know, the antivirus and tools and things like that in an up-to-date basis to do that. So can I say that statistically the only causes? No, but I think those are some of the things that we're seeing that are related to it from a data standpoint.
Yeah, but I mean, the awareness actually should improve over time instead of decrease. But like if you look here on this one, it's not an trend because we were not surviving. If you see a good or big degradation, you know, it's going in the direction of awareness. And money. I mean, people start to be more aware of this and less aware of it.
I don't see how's the best way to repeat that question. Is it about awareness, you know, or is it an education, or is it something else? Yeah. I think it's one of it. There's one thing that is important to know in the data is that sometimes it can trend. You know, that could say that we could say, oh, Canada and Mexico are next year are, you know, our next quarter, you know, have the highest, you know, infection rate. It depends sometimes the trends of the type of exploits that are being used, the type of malware that's being encountered, because we get that data from what do we go remove, and we use that data point. Because if we run the tool there and says, oh, yes, it encountered that machine, this is where the 5 or 10 things that we targeted that month or that quarter we encounter, and there may be in the United States that quarter, we may have had lots of other different types of malware, but it wasn't the ones we were looking for this month. So that's why I'm saying the data can be slightly skewed, so I was being cautious about it. Good question, though. Yes, Neil.
Is there any indication that the malware writers are, if you like, picking particular countries to go through their malware before rolling it out elsewhere?
Good question. Are there particular countries that the malware writers are going after? Well, I definitely don't want to turn it into a political discussion. No, but there's an element of, if you look at the different types of malware, it has different targets. If you're looking at things, there's like CryptoLocker and ransomware and things like that. And so certain writers are going to target certain places and could be more effectively. And there's some places that can say a malware writer, you know, from one country may not be very effective in being able to exploit, you know, in another, you know, because of infrastructure, because of currency, you know, types of things they're trying to do. So it all depends. But often they do target specific countries for specific things, and some it's easier. And likewise, I think phishing in some countries is easier with certain techniques, and others it's not. So I don't have a data-based answer, but yes, they do. But I'll drill into it a little bit more with a later slide. Yes?
We're in a scary space as well. We saw that with some mobile applications, sometimes when they're enabled in certain countries, they actually go out and, or whatever they do, it's evil. Did you see the same in the situation with the particular type of malware that you've seen?
So if I understand the question, so are we seeing a trend in the mobile or device type of malware in the data that we're seeing?
Or any malware, like it's country specific, so I have an IP address in this country, so therefore I'm now active.
Or is it based on a country? Honestly, I don't know the answer to that question, but, you know, happy to, you know, take it offline, saying that I might be able to dig that up from somebody that's more of an expert. Okay. Interesting. So the thing that just pulled it out is that, well, the countries with the least number of machines that were encountering the infection or encountering the machines with low infection and compromised rates and things like that. Certainly, it's kind of interesting that Scandinavia in this past quarter was the lowest, and in Japan as well. Why? Don't fully know the answer to that question. But at the same time, I think some of the countries that have very, very high bandwidth and connectivity, right, also because are more likely to be patched and up to date than others. But
yeah, I would also say that these particular countries, at least, they're more aggressive with taking down
So one of the comments from a member of the audience is that, is it being recorded? Oh, sorry. So that, yes, these are some of the countries that there are some countries, and these are, included in that, of countries that are much more aggressive at taking things down, whether botnets and active sites and things like that, and that actually has an effect on a given population. Absolutely. Yes. Good. The question is it the differences in infection and encounter rate, is it more based on defense more than the type of malware? I think in a general sense, yes. I'm not aware of data that's been would consistently show that different types of attacks are occurring only in specific regions or countries. Now, certainly there are things like, I once say you have to say phishing, of course, right? Myself, although I know a couple other languages, if I get a phishing mail in Japanese, I'm gonna be, I don't know what this is. I'm not even gonna click on it because I'm just gonna delete it because it's meaningless to me. Because I don't know Japanese, not against it. But so I think that's one example where sure, you have to target things differently. Yeah. But I'm not aware of any data that says that different types of attacks are occurring in different countries. Again, with that, compromise rate or the encounter rate is we did see an uptick in these countries, but these are the lowest where we see the lowest encounter rate. Now, I think it's certainly an interesting one here is in China. Here, which is the last line, kind of a dark, kind of purple, is that they have a low compromise or infection rate. But then this is where I remind is that this was in the past, quarter, things of the malware that we've been targeting for removal, right? And so does it mean that any given country is they have no malware or no compromised machines? It's that the past year, these are the malware that we've been targeting, this is where we're seeing the least of it in these countries. Now, going back, I think that it was kind of, we're hinting at a little bit, is, how many people around the world are using security software? So they're using anti-malware protection, type of things. And, the positive thing is that we're seeing, at 80%, pretty much consistently over the past year, it's really strong of, yes, people are running it, and we're saying always protected. We still have around 20% that are intermediate or intermittently. So sometimes they have it on, sometimes they don't, sometimes it's out of date, things like that. It stays pretty consistent, and we still see a couple percent every year of machines that are not doing anything, and that is obviously a big target for the malware. Is when you're not running the security tools, you're not running the antivirus or things like that, or you're not running on Windows machine like Emmet. There's a lot of malware out there. As soon as they see that you're running Emmet, E-M-E-T, and like, whoop, just bail. I'm not even going to try. It's not worth their effort. And so this is kind of just interesting data point. Now, if you see that, the trend here of the machines that are infected that we are cleaning, the rate of things. So the people that have machines that are the machines that are infected and have been compromised and that we're cleaning, right? Obviously, the protected and unprotected or the intermediately protected and the protected, you know, are way up there. Now why do we have this big leap, you know, from 3% on average, you know, to 22% in this quarter, even though you're always protected? I don't have a data point behind that, other than it's just something we're going to watch, right? It's like, okay, here was a particular trend or an exploit that went wild, and we just didn't have something specific that could catch that. So it's something you have to watch over time, but it could be an anomaly here in this quarter, but it's something. The high level is if you're less likely to be infected or compromised if you are running protection software as appropriate. Now, going to a little bit more on the data is that the type of malware, you know, the top line here is, you know, it's basically various types of Trojans, and you know, but the second one here I always like to call out is, you know, Trojan downloaders and droppers. You know, it's just continuously the biggest things is people, like, they go to a website and they download something, or they get something that's a Trojan that then will drop other code that will then go over and take over their system. The other ones, I think, you know, the worms and password stealers, things like that, stay pretty consistent in the lower range, but this is the upper two here. Now, I think you'll see it here from a data perspective of, you know, which types you see. I think was the question earlier, which I forgot about this this chart, is you will see a little bit based on given countries where different types of infection rates that we see based on them, based on countries. So you'll see that obviously in Brazil is a high country, but I'm trying to think one that would stand out in, you know, like here to say for, you know, France is even three times the likelihood, you know, of various Trojans than the United States. You know, it's just, there are some differences. The why, I don't know, but it's some interesting data points. So a lot of the, you know, I think of things that we always like call out, and there's not, you know, about data here, it's just, it's amazing of those Trojans and droppers, is like how many of these infections are occurring through just these software programs that people download around the world. It's like, oh yes, here's a tool I can use to protect my machine, or oh, it says I'm infected, so I download it. And then customers, my parents, do these things, and then we have to go wipe and clean their machines. Also, the big thing is, I think, continually growing, you know, this past year, is the ransomware is becoming quite quite costly, quite expensive, and quite a problem for lots of customers, where that they get the Trojan on their machine, it encrypts all their files and says, oh, you want them back, you have to, you know, wire me money. And that's been a big problem for not just consumers, but this is where it's, I think, really getting more into the small businesses. There's lots of businesses that, boy, they didn't have a backup. They didn't have all their data protected. And if they get it all encrypted, that they could be in a big, big mess getting into this situation. Here you're seeing that where we're seeing it from a regional perspective, things like that, of parts of the world that we're seeing the higher encounter rates or infection rates of this. The other interesting data point is that consumers versus enterprises. And I thought this one is probably doesn't surprise most people, but you know, the enterprises are much better off, you know, in the space, you know, but the consumers are almost two times more likely to be infected, you know, than the enterprise, because the enterprise has got more controls than that. But just an interesting data point.
Yeah, but that, would enterprise, would that just be desktop, or does enterprise include server then desktop?
The question is, does the enterprise include just desktop, or does it include servers and services as well? This data does include servers and things like that. So anything that is running our tools like Defender, which is on Windows Server, as you know, so the servers are included in that. Yeah, the comment is yes, is the data skewed? Yes, I because consumers are out on the internet and versus servers and services. Oh, absolutely. There's no disagreement about that. I think in general is that in the enterprises, even though I know we all love to surf our favorite social sites and things like that, while we're here at work, things as I think we have much more protections. We have much harder firewalls than our favorite wireless router connected to the internet that's not patched or patchable at all and things like that. So absolutely, it is skewed, but just an interesting data point. Yes, sir. Oh, how do you determine if a data point is enterprise or consumer? Good question. So if you look at the consumer, is a lot of things is what we get from the we get the data from the Defender, which we actually know what SKU it is. So it's saying, oh, this is the Windows Home SKU versus like, oh, this is the Windows Enterprise SKU. So that's one. But we also get it from System Center Endpoint Protection. System Center Endpoint Protection is not a consumer software from a Microsoft standpoint. So we do get some of that telemetry based on the product that collected it. And is it running on Home SKU? Is it running a Domain Join SKU? Those type of things. Good question. Yes, sir. The question is, if we do a drill down into the country or the country data, do we see the differences in cities and things like that? And here's the one that may surprise some people, but the answer is no, we don't. And do you know why? Because that starts to get to a privacy thing. That it's about we're collecting data in the common interest, but we don't collect the data that we could narrow down to, people in this city, this country, or this city, this postal code, these things like that. We're not collecting that data, and for multiple reasons. So we don't have that drill down because of our commitments to privacy. But it's a good question. Okay. A little bit left here, getting close to wrapping up, is a little bit about the spam, right? So that we are, spam is still occurring, but when a lot of the work that we've done in taking down some of these botnets, I think it's been in the news and things like that, and it's not just us, it's others in the industry, taking these down had a huge effect on the amount of spam. And I think that's one of the things that we do great partnership and working with others in the industry, in the community, on these type of things. But also, I'll say on the downside a little bit is, it used to be we might have much higher rates of the spam that was blocked at the edges, right? At the gateways and things like that. And now we're still seeing they're getting smarter, and so we're having to analyze. I'm not the phishing expert on the engine, but it's like doing the analyzing and deciphering and looking at it, saying. By the tools that are on the Exchange servers or mail servers and things like that, and actually saying, is this spam or not, and should I let it through or not, which is computationally much more expensive than obvious things from bad IP addresses, known botnets, and things like that. Those are easy. You're saying, oh, this is a bad sender, just block them. We don't let him even that mail from that host or that provider ever come in. Versus like, no, it's all coming from a safe spot that we know, and then we have to actually examine each and every message. That gets quite expensive. So I think I put this together. So basically here is how do we track the phishing impressions? So one of the big things is that, believe it or not, is we do it through Internet Explorer, right? And so we use Smart Screen in Internet Explorer. So they're actually saying, hey, a user clicked on an email. And Smart Screen looks at okay, I'm going to, before I open it, I go to a reputation service, look at it, and then determine, hang on, is this actually a bad site or not, based on what others have reported? So we're actually using reputation. And this is actually helping consumers a lot, especially consumers with their mail clients. They may not be signing up, for phishing services and things like that, like enterprises, so they don't know, is this a bad link to click? And so we continue to help them. This is just one example where we get a lot of this data from, is from what we collect in Smart Screen, as one example. Some of the phishing impressions by type. So if you look at, this is one I had a little bit of mobile data that I pulled out, is obviously you know, the historically, you know, the green line, financial, right? That was the most obvious phishing type of attack. People want to know your bank account and, you know, your password for your bank account. Now, what's interesting, what's climbing up across all devices is the orangish line. Online services, they want other accounts. This is where they're even talking, attacking to potential people in this room. Not for your bank account. What account do they want? They want your Azure account, if you have one. Do you know why they want your Azure account? Well, Neil said, yes, they want to use it to attack other people. That's one. Another is they want to mine bitcoins. And when you go to cloud services, there's lots of computation power. And if they can get away with it for a month, they can mine bitcoins with these. And that's an interesting trend that we're seeing from a fraud and things. Is they want those accounts more than they want your bank account. Because your bank account... So... that's kind of an interesting kind of a trend that we're seeing across in this particular area that I thought I'd call out.
That's kind of interesting because it's kind of arguably less illegal.
Yeah. Is it arguably, interesting trend, is it arguably less illegal? Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Clearly, yep. If someone's bank account steals money,
yep.
It's obviously illegal.
Yep.
But if you just steal yep. usage, it's a
yeah.
fuzzier, isn't it?
Great. Correct. And I think that's exactly, as Neil calls out, is they want usage and using these services because there's lots of cloud services available for lots of things. This is becoming one of the most valuable assets for people to take. I think, I don't know if the slide's a little bit slightly out of order, but you know, the different things that we've seen from Smart Screen, it's not just about phishing, you know, links and things like that, but also saying, yes, you're going to... This site you're going to go to is like, yep, they're going to download a Trojan, or there's a backdoor, or a drive-by, or an exploit. We know about the site. It's not ours, but we know because it's been reported. We can block you from using it, and that's been a very, very positive thing. Okay. Phishing sites. So I think the same type of geographical data is, you know, where are we finding most phishing sites that are hosted, which is quite interesting, I think, sometimes. Of the hot spots of the number of hosts or sites and the sites that are ones that are hosting the most phishing sites, which was quite interesting. I found the one in South Africa. That was one that's caught my eye, and I don't know why. What else we have? You know the difference between these two. Wouldn't it make? Oh, country region. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry for the confusion. This was last year, and this is the change to this year. So you can see that going back and forth, how it's evolved slightly, the number of phishing sites that are being set up and run over the past year. So it's kind of the trend there by regions. There's the side by side. Then malware distribution sites, you know, from last year to this year. I don't know if I have the comparison of the two. So you can see, you know, kind of some of the changes in growth in certain areas around the world of hosting malware distribution over the past year. So last is the, I think where we're coming about the malware is really the drive-by attacks, right? You know, a user connects, you know, to a website. They get redirected, you know, this is often one of the biggest things. So it could be a totally legitimate website. I shouldn't name a name because I think I'll make it look bad. But then, hey, if they were compromised and all they do are getting redirected from that known good site, you know, through the, you know, an embedded iframe or something like that, get to that bogus or that attacker site that takes the, that hosts the exploit and then downloads it and puts it onto the user. So the user never went to a bad website. They just went to your favorite shopping site or social site and things like that. And it got redirected to these malware sites, you know, in a hidden frame and it got attacked. But the user said, I never would go a place like that. But it does happen. And this is where a lot of people are like, well, gosh, how are people getting these malware? How are they getting these Trojans? It's because of these reasons where these legitimate sites get attacked just to get redirect an end user.
Did you ever get one catch that?
Well, the question is, would the certificates check that, be able to catch that? The answer is yes when there is using HTTPS, but sometimes there's a lot of sites out there that aren't using it for good and bad reasons. But I think from a security standpoint, I think that is a trend. We're moving more and more to seeing encryption everywhere. So I think it's harder and harder to do this type of attack. Thanks for bringing up. The trend of the past year of the drive-by downloads by the given areas, the number of pages that are being hosted with these. So last year to this year, and then you can see the kind of the comparison of where the shift. It seems like Canada's got a little bit better this year, and Greenland is not so bad, but there's still a little bit of having some sites that have been malicious. But I'll leave it at that. So that was kind of a review, kind of a high level of kind of the data that we collected over the past 6 months of the year. Give you things of some of the trends we're seeing, the kind of the challenges we're seeing, and what we're trying to do is across the industries is kind of making people aware of this and how we can work as an industry to make things better. Whether everything from encryption everywhere, which is good for everybody, but also how do we make the consumers and enterprise safer, and that's one of our goals. So, thanks for the opportunity to engage, and thanks for the questions.